Hello and welcome to the Echo Chamber podcast. My name is Tony Groves, and today we're revisiting. I was going to say revisiting, but we spend more time talking about Northern politics now than we do about Southern politics. Martin, what's happened to us?
It's more exciting at the moment, Tony, I think is the bottom line. It's just more exciting. And you know us, we're political nerds on that football the whole time, loving it. Go on.
Yeah. Look, we are delighted to be joined on the line via Zoom by the Lord Mayor and Alliance Party Councillor for Belfast, Kate Nicol. Kate, thanks so much for taking the time to talk to us.
Thanks for having me.
Listen, we've been batting back forward coming about doing this conversation for a while, but all the time things have been kind of going a bit crazy in the background. But before we get to that, you're only in the door as the mayor a couple of weeks, Kate. Do you want to just tell our listeners a little bit about yourself, what your politics are and what your ambitions are for your mayorship in Belfast?
Yeah, well, I'm 18 days in the job, which is almost as long as Edwin Poots was leader of the DUP. And I was installed on the 1st of June. Just delighted. I don't know if you know how the mayor system works in Belfast, but it's done on a de jure basis. So basically, when the local government elections happen, all the parties get together in a room and they have a grid of positions of responsibility and they divvy it up. So we knew Alliance was going to have year three. And I was selected by the party to be the Lord Mayor for the year. So just loving it. It's a wonderful role. It's very positive. People tend to be quite nice to you if you're the mayor, which is a refreshing change in politics. And I wasn't born here. I was born in Zimbabwe, which is why my accent is slightly different. And I just really want my year to be about our Belfast, the city, and how it belongs to everyone who it's home to, whether you were born here or whether you chose to make it your home. And I really just want to showcase the best of the city, you know, the positive initiatives and the people and the side that maybe doesn't get the coverage that it deserves.
You made a comment on your first meeting as you were chairing as Lord Mayor, where you said you're going to read a letter from a child. Do you want to just give I know what the details, but it might be helpful for listeners to give a perspective of why you're doing this and what it means in terms of how you hope things will be different, you know, for Belfast.
Yeah, so my main job is to chair the monthly full council meeting. And traditionally, some mayors have started the meeting with a reading, maybe some scripture or something moral, and it's not really my cup of tea. And I was thinking, well, the last year has been so hard for everyone, but especially for children and young people. And I don't think in public life we're that good at listening to their experiences and their views. So I thought a really good way of bringing their voices into the meetings would be to start with a letter from children, young people in our city. So the very first school that sent me in a letter was from Fleming Fulton. And a lot of their children have, special needs. Accessibility is a big issue for them. There are a lot of wheelchair users in the school. And they wrote me this wonderful letter about, you know, what they loved about Belfast, but also the problems and the issues with public transport and, ranging from very serious issues like the bus and curbs and pavements to wanting more goth shops and street food in the city. It was a really wonderful letter. And it just so happened that the next day I was meeting with the chief executive of TransLink, our public transport body. And I was able to give him the letter and said, you know, these are issues. You need to deal with this. And what's so good about that is because the mayor it's a civic role, you know, I don't have any lawmaking ability, sadly, but it is a way of connecting people together and there's influence within that. So that really is what I want to do with the year. I want to meet with people, but also listen to what the problems are and then see how I can connect them in with people who can make a difference.
Do you see Belfast is a city of more than two tribes? I mean, it's portrayed as a city of two tribes, but it's more complex and more diverse than that.
Yeah, it really is, Martin. And it's changed so much. So I moved here when I was 12 in 2000. And even just just in every way, it's changed. The last local government elections, there are now 8 political parties in Belfast City Council. You know, that's incredible. And it has been incredible in how it's changed things. We now have climate on the agenda as something we're really working towards. We have a climate commissioner. We declared a climate emergency. We have a whole body of work. We're starting to look at issues that matter to everyone. And I think the growth of not just the middle ground, because it isn't really that, you know, you've got Greens and People Before Profit. I think there's this growth of activists and people who represent a whole range of issues. And it's very simplistic to look at Northern Ireland as, you know, orange and green, because you're right, it's a myriad of things.
Kate, I'm just conscious of, obviously, we're sitting in Dublin and we're trying to look at, quite often there are comments made about the issues within Belfast, within the north as well, that we are, that some of the differences that we talked about, as Martin referred to, as tribal, a lot of it is inequality, a lot of it is poverty driven, it's educational attainment. In terms of the city council, you said, as the mayor, that you've no direct power, similar to our mayor. We kind of advocate here for a directly elected mayor that maybe will have powers to do those things. Are there initiatives in the city that you feel, in terms of integration, in terms of educational integration, community integration, and things like that, that you feel can actually break through that noise? Because at the moment, what we're hearing is a lot of sectarian nonsense, to tell you the truth.
Yeah. So whenever you look at kind of cross-community work that's happening, it's there, you know, that it's happening in communities. It's just, and it's so often the case everywhere, you know, the public tend to be a lot further ahead than the politicians are. And whenever there are any issues, it reduces to us and them. But yes, there's wonderful things happening in the city. Last night, I went to the Belfast Friendship Club, and it's the most amazing initiative that's been set up. And it's every Thursday from 7 to 9. If you're a person, you can go to the Friendship Club. And it tends to attract people who have come from different countries, a lot of asylum seekers and refugees, a lot of local people as well. And it's wonderful. And it's providing support that's needed. You know, there's so many things that are happening with children and young people that... There's amazing work that's happening in the city, and there's amazing community work. It's just sadly not always reflected. And I think it's not reflected necessarily by the Assembly, but if you look at what's happening in Council, we actually do work quite well together, and we do work on issues together. And I don't know if it's because we're invested in the same patch, in the same city. I don't know what it is, but there's just something about Stormont that is very dysfunctional.
Just going to interrupt the podcast because, well, we have to. It's been, obviously, we're coming up on over 570 episodes of the Echo Chamber, and that's without the hundreds and hundreds of other podcasts that we produce under Tortoiseshack. And it's become a huge industry in terms of the amount of work, effort, time, and opportunity cost that goes into it. And thousands of you are listening, like literally into the tens of thousands on a daily basis. Some days we've more, some days we've less, but it's in the thousands. And not many of you are actually putting your hands in your pocket and supporting us.
And it's going to lead to the situation, Tony, and we've discussed this, where we're just going to have to put it all behind a paywall. And if we do that, you won't hear these messages, because only people who pay for it will hear this.
I won't have to do these appeals, but I will say, here's the thing. I don't want to do that. But if you can afford to pay and you're listening, you can afford to chip in and think on the basis that you, maybe you're paying for someone who can't pay. And maybe that you doing that is paying it forward, that we can keep the thing bloody out there. But I don't want to do it, Martin. I just don't.
Yeah, and I know you don't want to. And I'm of it. Yeah, we've discussed, as Tony said, we've discussed this high and low. And I'm at the stage of saying, look, if we can't get more patrons by giving it out free, what we need to do is just put it all behind a paywall, and it's all for patrons. But we'd love to keep giving them out to everybody, because they're important conversations we're having, Tony.
Yeah, I understand. But I just look, we'll cross that Rubicon when we get to it, I suppose. But in the meantime, if you're listening, if you're enjoying what's been produced on a daily basis, hours of content on a daily basis and conversations you don't get elsewhere, conversations that, well, actually happens as you get months after we do them. But, you know, that's the story for their own talent scouts. It's patreon.com/tortoiseshack. It means no ads. It means no sponsors. And it means actually you don't have to listen to these appeals, because the podcasts that go out there don't include these appeals. It just goes straight on through and you're not interrupted. Last again, patreon.com/tortoiseshack. Thanks a lot.
I don't know what it is, but there's just something about Stormont that is very dysfunctional.
It was designed to be dysfunctional at the outset, unfortunately. Much of it is designed to be, you know, and that is still a concern as things move on. I do want to ask in terms of housing that we hear a lot about in Dublin, shortages in our cities, Cork, Limerick, Galway particularly bad at the moment. Belfast, there is one initiative that was pointed out to me by a homeless activist that you do with the SOS bus. Do you want to just give listeners, because I'd love some of our listeners to understand what that is, because I think it's something that we could adopt in all the cities across the island.
Oh, the SOS bus is fantastic. It's a big yellow bus. And it is parked in the city, and it offers to support medical treatment, cup of hot tea, signposting to anyone who needs it. It's a wonderful initiative. It frequently faces funding issues, but I think it's a real gem in the city that we have to protect, and definitely something that other cities can learn from. Anyone in Dublin is interested, I can signpost them to people involved if they want to learn a bit more.
I think they should. I think I've seen people talk about it as actually making a difference in how where their mindset was at a particular moment and at a particular low in their lives, and the SOS bus literally being that thing that gave them that link, whether it was a cup of tea or it was just a small short conversation. So I think it's a really interesting initiative. We have to talk. You said about how, I mean, like, we spoke to one of your colleagues, Brian Smith from the Green Party. There does seem to be a camaraderie in the council that is lacking in the assembly.
Yeah, Brian's fantastic. And that is something that is a big part of my plans for the year. I think quite often there'll be the Lord Mayor just goes to things, and it's really about them in the year. And I really want to go into different communities with councillors from other political parties, because I think people are crying out for politicians who can work together. So that's something I'm going to be doing. And it was one of the first things I asked when I became mayor. I said, invite me into your areas and I'll go with you and show people that we're working together. There is, and the public and private face of politics, I'm sure it's the same everywhere, but I worked in the Northern Ireland Assembly as a researcher for 4 or 5 years. And a lot of politicians are very personable. And when, you know, you may have different political views, but when you talk to them, it would be fine. And there's just this soap opera and this drama that is put on in the chambers. And it's so damaging, because then that plays out in communities, you know, that there's a real lack of leadership particularly from unionism at the moment, you know, like, you've got to be honest about that. So there's a lot of work that needs to be done. And at the moment, it is quite hard to be hopeful. But I suppose where I get my hope from is the leadership that I see at the very local level in council and in communities.
Is there particular challenges in the COVID, post-COVID era for the Lord Mayor?
Yes, well, recovery is going to be a massive part of it. We're still not entirely sure. Obviously, with Brexit and COVID, we had a massive fire in the city centre as well with the bank buildings. We've had all these challenges in the last couple of years. So how we rebuild the city, how we help businesses get back on their feet is important. I'm very concerned about children and young people and the impact of this. We know that, you know, for the older generation, it's been awful, but I think the next generation, children and young people have just suffered so much. And what the lasting impact of this is going to be concerns me. We have so many youth groups and organizations that do brilliant work for children and young people. But in Northern Ireland, there's a lot of duplication. and so it means that we're not working as efficiently as we could be. And one of the initiatives I want to bring about is just bringing all these groups together into City Hall and conducting a mapping exercise and showing where different support is across the city. So at least by the end of it, young people are fully aware of what's open to them, but also that they know that Belfast City Council has their back and is going to support them.
It would be, you reference a deficit in leadership and a deficit in leadership in unionism as it is currently. But what we've also seen in Belfast is we have seen, you know, youth involved in violence, whether you know, whatever level that was at. Some of it was overstated, some of it was overplayed because it helped. But we also saw protests where, you know, a flags were burnt, the United Ireland flag was a banner was taken down and burned. We've seen marches, we've seen those things. A lot of it seems to me, though, that there's young people who don't seem to feel that they're represented, whether it be in their politics or do they have the opportunities. Like, you have high levels of youth unemployment in the city. Is that the legacy? Is that the biggest challenge, more so than dealing with the troubles of the legacy of the troubles of the past?
But it's all connected. You know, so much of it is connected. There's so much kind of generational trauma. There's systemic injustice. There is a lack of opportunity. There are serious issues with paramilitarism and control. There is the lack of leadership. There's so many issues. Yes, and you started about mentioning inequality. You know, the poverty and it's a educational underachievement. There's so many problems in our city, and there's so much work that we need to do, which is why what's happening right now is actually, it's criminal. You know, we're dealing with a global pandemic. We have episodes of violence. We also, you know, at the same time, we also have young people who have a political voice. And one of the things that frustrates me so much is that politicians will say, oh, well, you don't want to get a criminal record. That's how they always respond to these young people who are out protesting and rioting. That's not what you say to them. You show them how they get involved in politics and you bring them on board and you show them there's another way of channeling that frustration and that desire for change. There's a lack of creativity. There's a lack of compassion. There are just so many issues. But there are people in other parties, and like Brian is a wonderful example of someone who is a community worker, youth worker, just a down-to-earth, decent guy who gets stuck in and gets things done. And you see those people in all political parties, and we just need to promote and encourage that more.
you say we see it in all political parties, but we are seeing I suppose a disintegration or a whatever of the DUP at the moment. What do you think of what's happened there overnight? I mean, it's quite extraordinary.
It's unbelievable. I was at engagements most of yesterday and wasn't really keeping up with the WhatsApp groups, and it took me about 2 hours to get through all the messages and the analysis. It's, on the one hand, it's this kind of soap opera that we've come to expect. And there's something so fascinating and compelling about it. I mean, the DUP are fascinating anyway. So the one part, you know, the drama is, especially if you're a political nerd, it's quite exciting. But then the more you think about it, the more you realize how deeply depressing it is. You know, it's so depressing. We're trying to emerge from a global pandemic. We have waiting lists that are the longest, you know, in the UK. Like, there are people who are suffering. There are so many issues. We had no assembly for 3 years. There's a backlog of legislation. And it's not just dealing with poverty and justice and all these important issues. We've no specific climate change legislation. Northern Ireland is so far behind in so many ways. And do you know, I mean, it's very easy to just say, oh, well, they're as bad as each other and that's what's happening right now. But it's not, you know, the Irish Language Act was agreed twice. It was agreed twice. This boils down to, in my opinion, sectarianism and anti-Irish sentiment. Like, it's, that's what it is. If you can't convince your base to accept something that you agreed to, that's your problem. And to bring the assembly down because of that, it's just so selfish. It's just so selfish.
I think that's a really good summary of the situation, because it does. And it does. Well, just before we came on air, we were talking about this, Martin, in terms of demographics. And, you know, it is the equivalent. I was trying to point out that it's the equivalent of the place with the population of, say, Blanchardstown dictating terms to the rest of the country in many ways. And that is just not how a democracy works. You know, it's just not. And it just seems to me that, you know, there has to be a space absolutely for cultural identity, be it British or Irish or mixed. There has to be a space for a stake in society for all those people, a voice at the table, a seat at the table. All of those things have to be done, but you have to want to come to the table.
Yes. And
there seems to be an unwillingness, Kate, to want to even come to the table.
There is. And that just, it baffles me, because I mean, the Good Friday Agreement, you know, makes it very clear that your unionism, your nationalism, whatever your views, are legitimate and they're valid, you know? And regardless of the constitutional position, whatever happens, we're always going to share this place. We're always going to have to share this place with each other. And to pretend that's not the case, or to pretend that you can just bulldoze your way through and have whatever you want, that's not how it works. We have to work together. It's the only way. Cooperation is the only way we've ever done anything, and the only way we will ever do anything. And it's you know, if you put your party identity above the good of everyone, that just damages us all. It's just not strategic more than anything else, you know. I find what's happening right now incredibly confusing, and I think it's reckless, and I think that there's a real need for just to come together and acceptance of the reality of the situation. And the most bizarre thing, I think, as well, from the DUP is if they want to protect the union, they need to make a success of Northern Ireland. There's so many people I know who would never fathom supporting a united Ireland, because they're happy. You know, if people are happy and content, they don't really want change. How they're going about it is just so destructive.
It is the politics of isolationism, of separation, of segregation. And those are the biggest barriers, I think, that Northern Ireland faces, is segregation and not knowing each other in different communities. The Irish language was just one small step along that way. I mean, there's a lot more to go. You have schools that need to be desegregated. There is so much work to be done. How do you convince a portion of the electorate that that's in their best interests to do?
Well, I mean, I think there's some people that it will just always be very hard to convince. And I think that it does come down to leadership again. You know, a lot of people have been brought up with the real fear and hatred of people from other communities. And that shouldn't represent Northern Ireland as a whole, and it shouldn't represent the city as a whole, because for the most part, this is a very warm, compassionate city where most people do just get on with each other and are good neighbors. It's just in pockets. I suppose one area that I take hope from is COVID and the response to COVID. The community response was so heartening, and we came together to support everyone, regardless of background. And And I think even though COVID has exposed the very real inequalities in our society and the issues that maybe haven't been dealt with, it also exposed how deep that sense of community and compassion is in the city. So yes, I think that I think for the most people, you know, have that and don't need to be convinced. They just need to be convinced what party is going to deliver for them. For other people where that kind of sectarianism is really entrenched, they need to have politicians who don't play on that. Every time there's a
but isn't that a huge problem, Kate? How Stormont was, or how the assembly was formed, was on the basis that this, if you identified as neither unionist or Republican or whatever terminology we're going to use, you almost had to vote that way anyway.
Yeah.
Because the way it was put together was, well, if you don't vote for them, the other side will vote for them. And if you put yourself somewhere in the middle, I'm conscious of looking at, like, we give out about centrists and this podcast quite a bit, you know, but your party's actually set up on the basis of wanting to be that centrist party. Is there a space and a political voice for what I would imagine now is a growing number of people in Northern Ireland who identify with neither of those extremes and see themselves more in that moderate space?
Yeah, so I think, like, sometimes that annoys me, the way Alliance is kind of positioned as this centrist party that exists really to act as a bridge between Sinn Féin and DUP, or, you know, nationalism and unionism.
Good.
That's not something that we don't exist to do that. We exist because we believe in anti-sectarianism and we're progressive, and we exist because of those principles. It's not as a result of the others. You know, we very much believe in what we stand for. And now I've forgotten what your question was.
My point is, there does always seem to be an opinion poll after opinion poll, people who don't identify with some of the, you know, the politics of the past, I suppose we'd say. But they also then, when the elections happen, they go into their silos, because that's how the actual assembly was formed. Like, when it was done as a power sharing thing, this was how it was done. So it's very hard to break a cycle, especially when you're asking people to take a chance on a, I'm going to sound like Tony Blair, a third way.
No, but it's not hard to, and we've done it. Naomi Long was the second MEP out of three. You know, I remember when I first joined Alliance, we used to have these meetings where we'd say, oh, how do we break the 10% barrier? You know, how are we going to do that? Well, we've done it. A significant number of our councillors topped the poll in the last election. It's happening. The rise of Greens and People for Profit and these different parties, it's happening. People are beginning to vote in different ways, and I think that's so positive. And unfortunately, other parties' response will then be, and mainly DUP, will be to attack those, and that doesn't work. I think things take time, but then suddenly there's a quick change. I mean, even when I first started working in the Northern Ireland Assembly, I started working for Anna Lowe, who was a South Belfast MLA, very progressive, one of three people out of 118 who talked about the need for reproductive rights, talked about ethnic minorities and supporting them. She talked about things that no one else really did, and equal marriage, same-sex marriage. And I remember 2012 thinking, these things are never going to happen in my lifetime. We're never going to have a change in abortion. We're never going to have same-sex marriage. And it felt like that for a long time. And then suddenly things change. So I think, you know, we have these conversations and then suddenly things change. And I'm very optimistic for Alliance's chances in the next assembly election.
Do you ever see a position where you could be the Lord Mayor? And I mean a Lord Mayor with some clout that could actually change, same as we need down here in Dublin. But could you see yourself being the Lord Mayor of Belfast?
Directly elected mayor.
Yeah, working with the Lord Mayor of Dublin, working with the Lord Mayor of Cork in a united Ireland of some form.
Okay, so there are a couple of parts to that. I haven't thought about how an elected Lord Mayor in Belfast would work. And what concerns me is that we, because of the different political parties and the smaller parties, and maybe I would say that because I'm an alliance, that need to have that representation. We have devolved government, then we have local government. At the moment, I think that more could be done with the Lord Mayor role, but I think that can be done individually. I don't think that necessarily needs to be an elected position, but it's something I'm going to think about a bit more. United Ireland, I wouldn't have thought it was possible pre-Brexit. Now, especially how things are going, it's very hard to not see it happening at some point. And I think that, you know, people are having these conversations, and I think political parties are wise to engage in the conversations in what that would look like. And I think unionism needs to do that too. There are a lot of people within Alliance. Alliance is often described as a soft unionist party. And I suppose in some ways, even though I always rail against it, I can understand why people would say that. But it's a cross-community party. We have members who have a range of views on the Constitution. And I know that from talking to different people, their views on what should happen has changed as a result of Brexit, because that European identity is very important to a lot of people in Northern Ireland. Unionists need to start making the case for why remaining in the union is important to them, if they're going to convince people any other way. But at the moment, it feels like there's a growing conversation around a United Ireland and what that could look like. And it feels like there is not really anyone from unionism making the case for the union.
I think that's that is the first time I've heard it put that way, Martin, in the people we spoke to. And I remember we spoke to Colin Harvey recently, obviously from Queens, who works on the Shared Island, and it was brilliant to hear him so optimistic about having a stake in how you found essentially a new country, a new constitution, a new, you know, what it would look like. And he was filled with optimism and hope and how we could actually do it, you know, fulfill the promises that we missed out on in 1916 when we said we cherish all the children of the country, of the state equally, fulfill some of those promises in better ways. And I thought that was really positive. But you're also right that the focus has shifted to the Northern Ireland Protocol, the border in the Irish Sea, and no one talks about the fact that, you know, you could be back in the EU within 30 days if everything went the other way, and it would be so much more an opportunity there, and I don't see that case being made much, Kate, at all.
No, and I mean there's also the point that in Northern Ireland we're in this potentially golden situation where we're a bridge to both, but we keep shooting ourselves in the feet. You know, this could be something that you could really make a case for. And I'm just, it baffles me that unionism haven't made more of a case of it. I suppose from my perspective as well is, you know, what happens. I think that I think you have to engage in these. I think it's prudent to engage in all conversations. Brexit was an eye-opener for a lot of people. And if you are planning, then you need to plan well and you need to engage everyone in the conversations. And while the potential kind of violent reaction is not a reason to not do something, you know, I'm so conscious of our very fragile peace and where we are right now. And that is something that genuinely gives me a lot of concern. But these conversations are happening. So how you deal with that is engaging in the conversations and making sure people are heard and part of every narrative that's ongoing.
I think you're right about, you know, having to engage, having to have these discussions. But I think another very important part of that is to honor what you agree to. And I think that's very, very important. And I think that's very lacking, and particularly in unionism. If you agree something, you must honor it. There's, you know, you must.
We've seen it in terms of you mentioned same-sex marriage, the women's right to choose. We've spoken about the Irish Language Act. And these things, they result in the awful phrase that we hate on this podcast, culture wars. And I hate that shit because we should be talking about, we should be talking about other, you know, that should just be done and we get on with it. I mean, I remember when we voted for same-sex marriage in Ireland and it was really emotional and we were delighted that we, that it followed through. But there was also an element of, you said, we shouldn't really have to, our brothers and sisters in the LGBT community shouldn't really actually ask us, have to ask us to help them have access to these things. It should just be done. Mm-hmm. And there seems to be so much of a barrier on these culture war nonsense. I mean, an argument over sausages, Kate. I mean, like, what are we talking about here? Is there any maturity? Martin thinks Sammy Wilson is the next leader of the DUP, and my head's going to explode.
He's trying to say that. Oh, I mean, yeah, and it just descends into this, doesn't it? And it's such a pity when there's so much other work that's ongoing, that's important and valuable, and just doesn't get the attention and the time that it needs. I feel like we've just got into this, you know, where it's crisis, talks, like last minute decision. And then it's just a cycle of drama, and the people who lose out are...
It's like a Nice Enders Christmas special every day, you know.
And it's exhausting. It's exhausting.
I want to finish with one positive question. So you're in your chair now. Things are starting to reopen now. There is a need for those conversations, and there's a need for people in this part of the island to actually be more cognizant of that and engage with that. If you had a message for people, our listeners of you know, Belfast, come and see us, what would it be, Kate?
Yeah, I know. I feel bad now. I think it's after yesterday that I'm a bit down. I'm a very positive person usually, so I'm sorry I've ruined this whole podcast. You know, Belfast is a wonderful city. It's a wonderful city. And this week has been Refugee Week, so I've been spending a lot of time with different refugee groups and asylum seekers. And yesterday I was talking to a few people who'd come to Belfast from Tibet and Palestine and South Africa and Zimbabwe. And one of the South Africans said, you know, like, we talk about racism a lot and I'm conscious it happens. I've never experienced that. I've only ever felt really welcome in the city. So many of the other groups just said they're so happy to be in Belfast and they feel safe and they feel welcome. And I think the image of Northern Ireland is like legacy of the past and the protocol and this dysfunctional politics, but the people are incredible. They let me become their mayor, you know, and I wasn't even born here. And it's a changing city and it's a warm city, and I'm very proud. I'm genuinely very proud to live here, and I'm very grateful that it became my home when I didn't have a home anymore. And I just want everyone else to feel the same pride. So yes, come and visit Belfast more. You're all very welcome. And do not think that we are defined by certain political parties, because we're so much more than that.
I think that's a very good place to leave it, Kate. And as you've said, there's much more than two tribes to Belfast. So thank you very much for coming on, having this chat with us. A very great pleasure for us. And we hope to talk to you again in the future.
Thanks for having me.
We'll be back on, actually, we're not back until Sunday, but we have a lot to talk on the Sunday show. And we've, so it'll be fun, folks. We hope to see lots of you there. Talk to you all soon. Take care. Bye-bye.
Tony and Martin, Martin and Tony.